When Cooper Days was first designed, it was all about stateless architectures because that was the future. But it turns out there's more than just stateless web applications out there. You might actually have to deal with complex things like state and the best way to operate those. And in this episode of Day 2 Cloud, we're going to be talking about operators of all things.
Yeah, operators, not people, Ned, but Kubernetes operators, a way to automate and make sure that these more complex and different applications get and stay up and running in a way that folks down the line just leverage the operator and create this thing, kind of like platform as a service or software as a service, but you're baking it into your Kubernetes platform to deliver that thing. Now, Ned, I got to admit, as we started recording this thing, the first 15, 20 minutes, I'm doing a lot of listening because it wasn't quite clicking. And then a little later, I was like, I got it. So, we kind of turned the corner on this one and it began to make a lot more sense. Very powerful Kubernetes operators.
Yeah, I saw that the potential that was out there just growing and growing the more that our guest, Rob Sumsky, talked about it. So without further ado, let's get right into the episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Day 2 Cloud. I'd like to introduce a very special guest for this episode. We have Rob Sumsky. He is a product manager at Red Hat. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So what we wanted to talk to you about on this episode was what's going on with Kubernetes and the operator and custom resource constructs. But before we dive into that, can you give listeners a little bit of background on what you do at Red Hat and how that might tie into what we're talking about today?
Sure. So I'm a product manager that primarily works on OpenShift, and my focus is our operator ecosystem. And that's both a set of tools that we're going to talk about, things like our operator SDK, as well as making sure our platform supports the best experience for those operators, and then working with the ecosystem to produce operators in open source communities, as well as with commercial companies.
Okay. So for those who might not be super familiar with operators or, you know, custom resource definitions and some of the other ways of extending Kubernetes, let's start with basics. What was the problem that existed within Kubernetes that operators and these other constructs were meant to solve?
It's really about the progression of the Kubernetes ecosystem. And so if you kind of look at it as a progression of some of the features that were in Kubernetes, is, you know, we started out with things primarily designed for stateless applications. So you have a deployment, you can scale it out. Replica sets are created under the hood. And then we quickly got to running stateful services. These are like, you know, really simple pods that need to have just a disk attached to them. So we've got stateful sets. And then once we got to really these complex distributed systems in Kubernetes is where we kind of didn't have built-in object types for this. You know, there's nothing about data replication or backup that is native to Kubernetes. You know, there's no object for that. And all these complex distributed systems need these capabilities. And so that's where operators came into the fold, is really running the third wave of Kubernetes applications.
The third wave. So the first wave was sort of, I think you mentioned the stateless ones, and then we need a little state in there. So we got our stateful sets, but now there's these more complex applications that might need constant state in the background. What's sort of an example of one of those third wave type applications, just so listeners can kind of have an idea in their mind of what we're working towards?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, things like Kafka is a good example, but I think an even better one is just Postgres. If you think about it, you know, in like a dev environment, you might be able to run Postgres and you back it with a stateful set. And, you know, that's just like if the database dies and or the node needs to, you know, be rebooted or something, you just map that storage around and that's great. But nobody in practice really actually deploys Postgres that way. You actually usually have master-master replication. You might have a read-only tier that has a connection pooling proxy in front of that. And so all of that operational expertise is something that you just need to know to be successful with Postgres. But you can also bake that operational expertise into an operator and then have all that kind of done for you. And that's the crux of this third wave of applications.
Okay, so almost think of it as the operator as code. So I know all this stuff in my head. This is how I operate. Now I want to codify that in some sort of resource so it knows how to do things if I just give it some sort of configuration file. Here's how I want things. Go make that happen for me. Is that sort of the idea?
Exactly. And it's kind of the idea that you know, there's some folks that are Postgres experts. And if that community is building an operator, then you don't necessarily have to be an expert. You need to know how you're going to connect this to your application. But you can just say HA equals true or read-only tier equals, you know, scale out to 3. But you don't need to wire all that stuff up. You don't need to know exactly what environment variables and config settings to use, because that operational expertise is built into the operator by that expert. So then you just, you know, you go off and run your production app.
So it sounds like this is the sort of thing that could have been baked into Kubernetes, but at its inception, it wasn't. Did anybody try to bake this into like main Kubernetes as a construct, or has it always been a separate thing?
It's always been separate because, you know, all these applications are different. And so, you know, you can't really generalize it too much other than, you know, the tools that we already have today. And all the tools that we have today, stateful sets, you know, the storage replication and all those things, are what we use under the hood in an operator. So you're just programming against Kubernetes APIs. But what you get through a CRD, a custom resource definition, is plugging it into the Kubernetes cluster in a defined extension model. But then you actually have a Postgres object at the end of the day, or Postgres cluster. Or you might have a Kafka cluster or a Kafka topic as different objects. And then you can still use the Kubernetes tooling, you know, kubectl get Postgreses. Will work. So you've effectively plugged it in and built it into Kubernetes, but it's not shipped, you know, in a Kubernetes binary. You're adding it on after the fact.
Okay. So if I install just vanilla upstream Kubernetes, I'm not going to get these custom resources. That's something you have to kind of bring in on your own. So like aside from, well, I guess, what is the operator exactly? And how does that tie into some of the other components you mentioned?
Yeah, so the operator is really two parts. One, it's that custom resource definition. This is the spec for all the things that this operator supports. And then just like the rest of Kubernetes, there are these long-running control loops behind the scenes trying to get to your desired state always. So if you had backups off and then say backups equals true, that change will be detected by this long-running control loop and then try to change your deployment to make that happen. This is the same way that, you know, stateful sets and deployments and other things work behind the scenes.
Okay, makes sense. So my operator is the thing that's actually running that loop, or it's
exactly
somehow injecting them. Okay, so that's the part that's running the loop, and it's running the loop and looking at what's in your custom resource to say, hey, I want it configured this certain way. And the operator goes, okay, I know how to make that happen. So as I go through each loop, I'll check and see if there's anything new. Is there? Yes. Okay, I'll go make it so. Very
exactly.
Picard-esque.
And so you as an operator author, what you're doing is actually programming that control loop. And so when somebody says, I want a production tier of Postgres, you're actually saying, oh, let me convert this single master. I'm going to set up another master and connect that together. I'm going to change all the relevant config. I'm going to set up these read-only proxies. I'm going to create some ingress rules to map to those. I might set up a bunch of other config maps to share state between all of this. You know, a bunch of additional other services. All that can just be done by this simple config change because all that expertise is baked into that control loop.
But again, as the consumer of Kubernetes here, I'm creating these operators and custom resource definitions. Kubernetes has given me this as a construct. I can now leverage operators and CRDs to write whatever this custom thing is that I want from my specific environment. Is that right?
Yeah, so Kubernetes provides the framework, and then you can go shop for an operator however you would like. As part of our effort, we have a community listing of all of these at operatorhub.io. And so you can go find MySQL and Postgres and Kafka and storage providers and machine learning, all these things that you don't then have to be an expert in, but you can use them and plug them into your Kubernetes cluster.
Okay. So I think you mentioned previously, but just to kind of go back to this for a second, I have my native tools that I'm probably going to use when I'm interacting with Kubernetes. You mentioned kubectl. You can address the API directly. Maybe you have some sort of GUI tacked onto it. Do operators work with all of those components, or am I building a separate API to interact with that operator construct?
Nope. The API that you use is the Kubernetes API itself. And then, like you said, it's used by all those tools. So, you know, any of the upstream tooling, whether it's kubectl and using Customize or any of that stuff, all works with the operator ecosystem because you're just using that Kubernetes API as your state of truth. And that's a really big part of our effort, is that's how we keep it agnostic. It works against all kube. And so one of the great things about these is you can produce one operator and use it against all Kubernetes, you know, whether it's hosted in the cloud, on-prem, commercial, open source, et cetera.
Yeah, that actually leads me to what I was kind of thinking back in my head is like, if I just have a default install of Kubernetes, it shouldn't be any problem to support it. But if it's slightly customized, like the way that I'm sure AWS is running EKS or Azure's running AKS, they've done some tweaks and some customization to what's going on back there. Can I be relatively assured that that operator is going to work consistently across all these different environments? Or are there some caveats that I need to keep in mind?
It should mostly just work because, once again, you're just programming against Kubernetes as your API. And so as long as, you know, stateful sets and deployments and pods and ingress rules and network policies all work, then you should be good to go. There are some things about, you know, an operator might need stateful storage and you can plug that in through the container storage interface. But, you know, just want to make sure if it's like a high performance database, you want to make sure you have some decent, you know, disks backing that storage. If it's over the network, for example. So there's mostly, you know, just Kube API behind it with some, you know, resource constraints that are pretty obvious kind of to anybody being successful with a cluster.
Okay, gotcha. So I think we've kind of established what the operator is and a little bit of how it works with custom resource definitions. And it's basically leveraging all of these primitives that exist in Kubernetes. Can one operator interact with another? Have people kind of built out whole ecosystems of operators for a more complex application? I guess, where's that line of delineation where I should use an operator and where I'm just creating a deployment or my own application?
Yeah, so this is like basically two really important points combined together. And so I'll address them separately. The first one is, when do you need an operator? And it's really that, remember that control loop is running, you know, constantly. It's when you have an application that needs some automated smarts built into it because, you know, it's either production grade or it does have all these components. And, you know, if one of those components fails, you can build in logic to recover that automatically or, you know, scale things out based on load or all these smarts. That's really what you get. You get this kind of automated operations day two experience that you don't get from just, oh, run a pod and, you know, keep it running or run a deployment and kind of never mess with it too much. There's not a human in the loop. You can have the system be able to monitor itself, scale itself out, back it up, do data rebalancing, all these smarts that you want from a cloud service that you get with an operator. So it works just like one of these hosted databases or, you know, anything like that you get from a cloud provider.
Hmm. Okay. And I think you said there was a second thing to pick apart there a little bit. Is that the sort of the decision point on?
The dependency model. So we have a very rich ecosystem of operators, and we have a project called the Operator Lifecycle Manager. And that does basically exactly what it sounds like. It helps you install operators on a cluster, but also do dependency management between them. So if you think about an application that might want a storage tier or a database tier or something like that, maybe a memcache-based like caching layer, that operator doesn't have to do all of that. It can defer to a memcache operator and put that in front of your application. And so this is where you can get the expertise from like the memcache community and then your database or your app community, but they don't have to be intertwined with that dependency resolution.
Okay, so yeah, I imagine you want to keep a certain amount of loosely coupled. If I don't want to use memcache, I want to use Redis or something. If I want to use that instead, I need to be able to swap that out, but I could choose I want to use the operator for one or the operator for the other. Is that kind of what it's going for?
Yes, exactly. But sometimes, you know, all those components are required. And a good example of this is like a service mesh. So the service mesh that we provide from Red Hat inside of OpenShift, it's actually three different components. And you know, there's operators for each of those because they might want to release on their own cycle or they've got, you know, specific bits of expertise built in. But we see service mesh as Istio, which is kind of the traffic management layer, and then Jaeger, which is a tracing layer, so tracing packets as it's going through the mesh, and then a user interface. And so all three of those are operators that work together. So when you say, I want service mesh, you actually get all of them, and you know, the dependency model makes that work.
So now that we have a kind of a pretty good idea of what operators are, why I might want to use them, let's get into sort of the logistics of I, as a Kubernetes certified administrator, I've passed the exam. Am I the person who's creating this operator? Am I installing in a cluster? Sort of, what are the different roles involved in the cluster lifecycle?
Yeah, that's a great question. We basically see two personas that are involved in this. You have a cluster administrator who is, you know, these are extensions of a cluster. So the admin is installing those and saying, yes, it is blessed for you to use these databases and these AI services or whatever on your cluster. And then you have the individual engineers or teams that are then consuming those services. And, you know, each one of those gets their own quota and they have access to their namespaces and they have all the self-service goodness that they get from Kubernetes. And so those are the two roles that are interacting with these, engineers getting it self-service like you would from a cloud provider. And then the administrator that's blessing it and saying, yes, I've vetted these for, they're secure and things like that.
But you're talking about, like a cloud provider would. So that's one of the things I'm trying to understand about operators is who the primary consumers of this going to be. Is it going to be me as an enterprise where I'm rolling out Kubernetes myself and I just want to add that service so I have that feeling that I'm consuming a service as if I was a cloud provider? Or is it, in fact, I am a cloud provider and I'm building a service that I want people that are consuming Kubernetes on my platform to be consuming? Or maybe it's both?
It's both, but it's primarily more for if you are somebody that produces software and it's installed many, many times, so whether that's a commercial company where you're selling a product that gets installed, or you're somebody that wants to have a true hybrid cloud experience where you want to use the same thing on three different cloud providers and on-prem, or you're selling software to everybody on every platform, and so Kubernetes is your installation deployment. And so that is where you produce an operator once and it works across all those environments. And so that could be you providing software as a commercial company or using open source software inside of your enterprise where you know that you want to be on two different clouds or cloud and on-prem.
So it's giving me that ability to automate a complex deployment, an unusually complex deployment, maybe with a lot of dependencies and characteristics about how I want this deployment to stand up. And I need to do that over and over and over again. This operator can template that out for me, and I can give all the usual RBAC and so on to different folks within my organization to use them as needed.
Exactly. And repeatability is a big thing here. So, given the same inputs, the operator should always produce the same outputs. And so that works if you're doing dev stage test prod kind of situations, or if you have five production clusters in five different geographies and you want to get the same deployment on all of them. You produce this operator once and you can use it across that matrix there, which can, rapidly blow up. That's 4x5 there. So that's 20 different environments that you have, but one operator can manage all that for you.
Right. I'm immediately thinking more of a larger enterprise that has multiple business units and you want them all to be deploying a particular type of software. Say we talked about Postgres. You want everybody to deploy Postgres in a consistent way. So you can set up these operators for them and it's got the proper operational logic baked in. So you just say, hey, this is how we want it set up if you're going to use it in dev and if you're going to use it in staging and in prod, maybe in prod it needs to be HA and you give them an option to add, encryption or other compliance type things. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the thing that my mind jumps to. Is that how you've seen some enterprises consume operators?
Yeah, that's a really popular use case, which is, at our big company, Fortune 500, we have one logging stack that we want everybody to use because it's dumb for all these business units to reproduce that. And so here, boom, here's an operator that anybody can pick off and deploy. You don't need to be an expert once again, but you need to know how, logging works in general, or rate limiting and, DDoS protection proxies and things like that, where it's going to front every app that you run. But, everybody needs to run their own instances of it, then operator is a really great way to do that.
Okay.
So does the operator remain involved in the deployment once it's done? That is, let's say I've got this operator and I've used it. I've done my deployment based on that template. I go back into the operator's architect because I need to change a thing. Does that then, after I've made that change to the operator, are the deployments based on that operator also updated and changed?
Yes, exactly. So that day two experience is really, really critical to it. And this is where we think the power of operators, they really shine. And if you think about an install, it's really just like the first instance of a day two operation. Remember, there's this control loop running that's just trying to get always to your desired state. And your desired state went from nothing to something. And then it's going to make that happen. And then if you change some config or a new feature comes in a new version of the operator, then you can start rolling that feature out because the desired state's changed from that feature wasn't there to now that feature is there.
Okay, so kind of related to that, what happens when I need to update my Kubernetes clusters to a new version? Am I at risk of a breaking change to my operator if I go from 1.16 to 1.17 and something like that?
So there's always a risk because APIs do change between Kubernetes versions, but at this point, the project is so mature that remember we're just programming against staple sets and pods and deployments and config maps. All that stuff is GA. And so as long as the operator is consuming, you know, those GA APIs, and then the Kubernetes community doesn't break its API contract, you should be good to go. Now, there always are going to be operators that want to consume more bleeding edge features. And so those operators could then start being smart about, oh, I'm on a 116 versus a 117 cluster, and I know that this API has gone GA, so I can start using that version of it now. So that's a bunch of other smarts that you can bake in there too, if you need to. And the nice thing about this is you do have a real programming language. You know, you're building these in either Go or Ansible or Java, versus something like Helm, where there's no like real logic there to actually do that type of switching.
I love the way you just said Kubernetes is so mature, because there's a lot of people listening to this who are like poking at the outer edges of Kubernetes, trying to figure out what this whole thing is. And you're like, oh yeah, it's so mature.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, all the innovation now is being built on top of Kubernetes and plugging in with these custom resource definitions, exactly what operators are doing. So all the service meshes, all the serverless frameworks, that's all being built on top. All of the third-party ingress controllers and other routing API logic, like API proxies, is all built on top once again. So I think it's like the community flourishing in the correct way, where core Kubernetes is now becoming kind of boring. And it's that, you know, fringes, that outer edge that you're seeing everybody interested in, because that's where the cool stuff is.
And you're really echoing what Kelsey Hightower said to us on a show we published it on Christmas Day 2019. He made the point multiple times in that show, Kubernetes is done, you know, and that he was referring to the same thing. The core of Kubernetes is there. So that does give me a little more confidence that when we use some of these newer things, or, you know, more exotic kind of constructs like operators and CRDs, yeah, the underlying Kubernetes, upgrading it is, as you said, there is a risk, but it's less likely to break our use of these quote-unquote fancier things.
Yeah, exactly. And always, you know, you need to test out new changes in other environments before your production. And, you know, none of that changes with this either. But hopefully you can just do it in a very automated and repeatable way versus, you know, people running shell scripts.
Yeah, like you mentioned, it's using the core constructs that exist in Kubernetes. And those, at this point, like Kelsey said, they're kind of done. Like, there's not going to be any massive changes about how you use stateful sets or pods or ingress controllers or some of the just the down level elemental kind of things. It's now going to be all the cool stuff that's happening a little higher up in the stack.
Exactly.
You mentioned a couple interesting examples of how operators are being used, but I'm just curious, do you have some real world use cases where operators have been deployed that you could share?
Yeah, there's a ton of them to talk about. Probably my favorite one is, I won't name who this organization is, but they actually have an operator that they've written internally that sets up their, you know, very complicated, very large tech stack. What they've used this operator to do is, you know, you've got a team, like I said, that's doing maybe just the front end, just the caching layer, just you know, this core feature set, and provide half of the APIs, and another team provides another half of the APIs. And what they use this operator to do is migrate parts of that app from VMs to containers. And so they had an operator that at one point was, you know, deploying 50% containers and 50% VMs. And then over successive releases, as those teams started moving to containers, the operator would then shift from, you know, EC2 API calls to Kubernetes API calls. And anybody deploying this didn't ever know that that was the case. You know, they just application popped out on the other end. And so I think that's really exciting to see. There's a bunch of development, you know, in these open source communities, but also in these enterprises are doing really, really cool things with this. Another really cool one is, this has been shared on stage at KubeCon several times. If you're running a storage system on your Kubernetes cluster, you have to use an operator. Whether it's Storage OS or Portworx or several other of these communities, Rook is a great one. You need to be doing this with an operator. It's too much to do, you know, manually as a human that's, you know, poking around at things. Storage is really critical to the cluster, and you need to have something that's keeping an eye on it, you know, every millisecond, which this control loop is doing.
I'd like to dive into that a little bit, because I know storage has gone through a bit of a journey when it comes to Kubernetes. So how have operators kind of replaced the way that things were being done?
Yeah, it's kind of two parts. I think in the early days, you know, all the storage lived off cluster in Kubernetes, and, you know, still to some extent does if you're using the storage volumes that, you know, come with a cloud provider. But what that does is it leaves you with all these machines that are in your Kubernetes cluster with empty disks doing nothing. And, you know, you're paying for that stuff. And so what we see is really popular, especially among bare metal users, is they actually want to use those disks. And so they say, hey, just like we take a cloud volume from like an EBS on Amazon, why can't my cluster just provide that back to the cluster? And so, you know, you're doing all the replication and everything that you would get from that type of service, but you're using an operator to run it and aggregating all of those disks in your cluster and still getting HA, getting all the speeds that you want. And because they're local to your nodes, you know, you're getting pretty decent performance as well.
Right, at probably a lower cost point too, because I can speak from experience, sand storage is not cheap.
Yeah, well, the beauty is you're already paying for it. They're already on nodes that are in your cluster. They're just typically going unused.
Right, right. But obviously you need an operator to handle that whole back end of how the storage should be configured and replicated. And hey, I want HA, go make that happen. That's a lot of cool complexity right there.
Yeah. And I think the Rook project is a CNCF project that is probably the leader in this. And so if folks haven't checked that out, I think it's just rook.io. They've got an operator. It supports a number of different configuration options and it, you know, is very much production quality.
Oh, no. Another thing for me to dig into in my lab. Oh, it's so dangerous. it's a never ending list and it just keeps getting longer. Another thing that I wanted to kind of talk about when it comes to operators and Kubernetes is, generally, we're talking about containers because obviously, I assume that generally the operator is deployed as like a set of containers that's going to be working in this control loop, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it occurs to me, you can manage things outside of containers with an operator if you have a hybrid application that's not just in the Kubernetes cluster, but also interacting with a load balancer somewhere and some storage and, I don't know, a database application that's installed on bare metal. Like, have operators started to evolve to handle those kind of use cases where it's not just containers?
Yes, absolutely. And so we have a number of different flavors of an operator SDK to help you kind of bootstrap everything you need to build one. And one of them is with Ansible. And Ansible really excels because its ecosystem talks to a whole bunch of different things for a whole bunch of different reasons. You know, namely, if you want to create DNS records that point to an application that you just deployed on your Kubernetes cluster, or you need to reconfigure a hardware load balancer that's in an enterprise environment somewhere, you can do all of those things with the operator. And it doesn't, you know, just have to be on cluster. You can reach out to all kinds of things. If you want to configure Cloudflare or another CDN, you know, that all by definition lives outside the cluster.
Right, right. No, it's expanding my mind because one of the things that I've been hearing about from various people, I think Kelsey mentioned it, VMware's talked about this a little bit, and some other vendors, is the idea of taking the Kubernetes API and extending it outside of the cluster because it just has a really good declarative model and a consistent API. And it sounds like, you know, operators might be the way to approach that. Does that line up with what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the most promising view of this is actually the cloud providers themselves have produced operators that model all of their cloud services, like S3 buckets and databases and all the things you get from the cloud as resources in Kubernetes. And so with kubectl, you can create an S3 bucket because that's, you know, part of the config of your application you know, any number of things. And so I think there's an operator from both Amazon and Microsoft, and I think Google has one in beta as well. So, you know, all three of the major clouds have embraced this concept. And so I think that's really exciting. Once again, you're standardizing on the Kube API. And that's why I think an operator is so nice for somebody delivering software, is you're just really writing against this one API, not, you know, this platform and that platform. You can really save your engineering cycles.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just thinking about all the potential use cases. Like if I were trying to build a hybrid cloud model, this is exactly the kind of tooling that I might want to do that sort of thing. If I were trying to refactor an older application, but I need all of the operational logic that I've had baked in for years, I can, you know, move those over to an operator platform. So I'm thinking about all the possibilities.
Yeah, there is a lot. I like that there's this openness to it as well, where you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Someone's probably got an application similar to yours that they've shared that you can start with, then tweak it to your own internal workflow if you need to make it work that way. There's just a lot of flexibility, and in the spirit of open source and Kubernetes and sharing and community, that aspect to it as well. It's powerful.
Yeah, super powerful. And there's this huge community already. I think some of, you know, the most popular operators are probably the Prometheus operator, which was written originally by CoreOS, where this operator concept came from. And, you know, there's probably thousands and thousands and thousands of people using that operator to run probably 100,000 different Prometheus instances. And so that's the really exciting thing, is we're seeing that expertise baked in once by a small group of people and then used by tons and tons of them. And that's like, you know, the power of open source, but then it just makes all these applications really easily consumable on Kubernetes.
Well, Rob, we're recording this and Kubernetes 1.17 is the current version. But, it, you know, we're reiterating on a 3-month release cycle here for Kubernetes. So people that are in the future listening in their flying cars as they commute to work, what's on the roadmap here that they might have if in their operators and CRDs in these later versions of Kates?
So we're moving to always push the automation boundary. And so we have this, what we call the capability model of operators. And it runs the gamut from like just really doing basic install of, you know, just make all the pods and stuff, all the way to true, what we call autopilot. Like imagine the world's best cloud service that, you know, scales exactly what it needs to. It does all the backups for you. It does anomaly detection and config remediation and all these things that can be baked into an operator. And so we're pushing all of our different commercial partners and open source communities to get to that nirvana of this autopilot landscape. And so that's where we're pushing, you know, that's tools that we're doing inside of our SDKs. It's just general knowledge sharing and getting folks to talk about how they're embedding AI into their operator to start looking at anomalies and fixing them automatically. So we think that's a really exciting place to go. And we're starting to work with some different communities on that right now.
Oh boy, you did it. You said AI. So to me, that means someone's baking algorithmic logic into the operator such that it can learn from data sets and then infer correct actions to take to meet the ultimate goal of the operator, something along those lines?
Yeah, exactly. And that can either be, you know, self-learning inside of the operator itself or just a model that's baked into it from, you know, a larger data set. And if you think about, you know, either in like a Fortune 500 company or one of these database companies that has a SaaS tier that they offer, you know, I think like MongoDB and others have these hosted platforms. Think about what they can learn by, you know, doing remediation of different issues that they see at, you know, thousands of database scale. Same thing with these Fortune 500s. If they're hosting databases centrally for all their teams, you know, they're running thousands and thousands of databases. You can learn a lot about that and then bake that expertise back into the operator. And the same thing goes for an open source community where you've got a ton of folks using something. I mean, think how wide Postgres is used. What can you learn from millions of Postgres installs and bake that into an operator that everybody benefits from?
Yeah, it's funny when you put it that way. You know, what can we learn from? You know, what can the algorithm learn from the data sets and so on? Because it does feel like, as a person who's worked with lots of infrastructure and is very control oriented, it feels like you're giving up a little bit of control to the algorithm. But when you're operating at a certain scale, that does seem to be the future, because how else are you going to do it?
Yeah. I mean, these clusters change constantly too. If you think about, like, if you look at any reasonably loaded Kubernetes cluster and just like, you know, in OpenShift, we do these live updates of the console. And if you go to the pods page and look at pods coming and going, you know, every millisecond there's activity happening and, you know, human just can't keep up with that. And they shouldn't. Computers are better at doing this. And it's not to say that we're trying to get rid of humans. Humans can just do higher order tasks. They don't need to be, you know, just running shell scripts and run books and looking at wiki pages for what to do on Postgres. They can, you know, better serve to do higher level things.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, because you mentioned AI and ML, but there's also a component where a lot of these operators are open source and you want the experience of the users to feed back into the project. So with that in mind, is there some sort of data gathering that's happening or that can be added to operators so that you can see how they're being used and maybe get some ideas of how they could be improved? Or is that something for the future?
I think you're seeing a little bit of that happening now. And I think, you know, for folks, especially that have commercial software that might be doing this anyways, you know, the operator is going to deploy that and they would get, you know, a telemetry feed or something like that. But I think that is going to be really crucial for us as a community learning from all of this. And even like, I think there's a nice kind of community practice of writing up root cause analysis and things like that on all these cloud outages. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that starting to happen for operators where, you know, it's at some point an operator is going to go haywire because of, you know, some test that wasn't written correctly. And, you know, it actually might go delete something that shouldn't, or just, hey, we really like saw this load increase when we changed this config and we didn't actually know that, but the operator went and remediated it, for example. But let's bake that in the future, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I suppose that is the danger. And I think that's what Ethan was alluding to. When you do things in a declarative way, you're not telling the operator how to do something. You're just saying, this is how I would like it. And you're leaving it up to the operator to properly interpret what you want and make it a reality. And if something goes wrong, if it writes things out a little bit like you wouldn't expect it, and suddenly you have 500 pods instead of 50, things could break. So you definitely, I definitely would want that feedback loop to, you know, file a bug report or, you know, just improve that operator iteratively, especially if it's an open source one, so I can get the benefit of everybody else who's come before me and the mistakes that they made. So hopefully I won't make them, or as many of them.
Yeah. And this, a lot of this is just traditional, you know, the open source process and, you know, feeding bugs back into the project and that type of thing. But it's also, you need really strong testing tools. And that's where I think it makes a lot of sense to use some of the SDKs that our community produces, because they are already, you know, baking in ways of running your unit tests and integration tests and, you know, testing that logic that you're putting into the operator. And so we're saying, spend your time on that, write that control loop, write your test, make sure that's bulletproof. And the team that produces the SDK is actually going to do all the nitty gritty about how do I authenticate with the Kubernetes API and how do I do watches? And when those watches expire, how do I restart them? You know, all the cruft that comes along with that, we've got covered for you. You bring your expertise and then test that expertise is really what we want.
So if someone is thinking about getting started with operators, like where should they go? What are some different ways for them to get involved in this process?
So the two resources are probably operatorhub.io if you just want to check out some operators. I think we've got like over 100 of them listed there, and they span probably everything pretty popular at this point. Primarily, you know, databases are a really great use case for operators. So if you're running a database on Kube, go check with some of those operators out and start playing around. And then if you actually want to build some operators, go check out our SDKs. They're also linked from that website, but also you can find them on GitHub under the Operator Framework organization. That is the kind of holding community that we have for both all of our SDKs, the Lifecycle Manager, which I mentioned, that help you get these installed and running and updated. And then Operator Hub is in there as well.
Okay, great.
Excellent. Full-fledged. Lots of ways to get involved. As usual, I wasn't expecting anything less, Rob. Well, Rob, we've talked a lot about Kate's operators, CRDs here today. Give us some takeaways. What are let's say three things that you want the audience to remember as we wrap up the show?
Sure. The first one is, I think I've used the word consistency and repeatability a lot. All of this is extremely important as, you know, we get more complex applications and, you know, companies are always just running more and more web services. It's just how you compete today. Operators are how you can scale that whole process with your same size development teams is, you know, encoding a lot of that into software. You know, software is eating the world. This is another instance of that. And the CRDs that you're using with your operators also can really tie into a really nice GitOps workflow. Because instead of, you know, if you're reviewing a pull request and somebody's changing a config file a bazillion places, or there's a whole bunch of, you know, YAML that's changing, think about reviewing one Postgres object instead of, you know, 30 different files. That's where it provides a really nice GitOps experience in your PR reviews. So I think that's the first takeaway. The second one is that you really don't have to be an expert in every piece of software to be successful with it if you have an operator. So if you're producing software for other folks, you know, those folks don't have time to be an expert in your bespoke configuration options or when something is going to go from beta to GA and all that. No one should have to be an expert in everything. They do need to know how to use it, of course. So you can rely on the network effects of, you know, a small group of folks putting in the expertise and then a wide group of folks that are just the audience for that operator, and everyone's being successful with that, I think is really, really key. And that, you know, just echoes, it's the open source way for the most part. And then the last kind of is related to the first one, which is like distributed systems are just getting more complex. The way that you operate machines, as you know, it's not on a single machine level anymore. You're clustering 30, 100 machines together, and then you're going to run 1,000 applications on them. They're all sharing resources. You know, like I said, from millisecond to millisecond, the state is changing on that cluster. And the best way to run those systems is an operator. And I think almost realistically, the only way to do it if you get any true scale on a shared Kubernetes cluster, as is pretty popular these days. And so operators are really how you do that.
Awesome. Awesome. Really good information. If people want to know more about you, about what Red Hat does with operators, et cetera, where should they go? How can they reach out to you?
We've got a number of different properties. I'd say operators are really built into OpenShift at its core. We actually have OpenShift running via operators. So we do these really seamless upgrades. And the way that's done under the hood is we have operators that run Kubernetes itself. Just like it's useful for you to run your applications, we run the cluster with it. So if you want to check that out, it's at OpenShift.com. And then we've got an operator certification program as well. And so if folks want to look at operators that have been a little bit more vetted, a little bit more tested, that are enterprise ready, you can find that on redhat.com as well, or just search certified operators and that'll come up.
Are you available on social media for interaction, or do you stay on the down low?
No, yeah, I love taking questions. We've got a mailing list that's an operator framework. It's a Google group, but you can also tweet at me. I'm just at Rob Sumsky. And I would love to, point you towards resources, help you with, advice about how should I model this in an operator. I think that's a really key part of our mailing list too, is, open source way. We all want to, start learning about the failures folks are having, the successes that they're having, how they're tackling problems, how they think about it. So I'd love to help you with all that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rob, for being a guest on Day 2 Cloud.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Rob for appearing on Day 2 Cloud, and virtual high fives to you for tuning in. If you have suggestions for future shows, we'd love to hear them. Hit either of us up on Twitter at ecbanks or at ned1313, or fill out the form on my fancy website, nedinthecloud.com. If you like engineering-oriented shows like this one, visit packetpushers.net/subscribe. All of our podcasts, newsletters, and websites are there. It's all nerdy content designed for your professional career development. Until then, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.